The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
I love this one. This is a good one. What the spirit of the age calls progress. Okay, what the spirit of the age calls progress. In 160 years, we went from the U.S. Supreme Court refusing to recognize a black man named Dred Scott was a person to putting on the U.S. Supreme Court a black person who claims she can't define what a woman is. My buddy Steve Dace tweeted that out this morning, and that's the ridiculousness as we continue to discuss it here on the show. Welcome back, everybody. The ridiculousness of the modern age, the prince of the power of the air, the spirit of the age, as Steve Dace likes to use that phrase a lot, when it comes to ideology trumping, well, pretty much everything. Now, ideology trumps reality. It doesn't matter. Any outie, it doesn't really matter. You define your gender, you define whatever. Right, that all bets are off. You do whatever you want to do, and that's the spirit of the age. That's the lies of the devil, going right back to the garden, wanting to just kind of mix up everything, confuse everything. And for those of you that are not in Christ, you're more than willing to play along. So you've got people that you're either a child of God or the child of the devil. We all should acknowledge that. But just being a child of the devil doesn't mean you're just some ruse, right? You are a thinking person, even if you don't have the aid of the Holy Spirit. You're a thinking person because you're made in the image of God. But that doesn't seem to matter anymore either. So you throw that out. So in the third segment today, we'll talk to Joseph Backholm. He's been on the show before. Senior fellow for Biblical Worldview and Strategic Engagement at Family Research Council. Had some great analysis on what happened just the other day with Ketanji Brown Jackson and Senator Marsha Blackburn, who was referencing a previous case dealing with gender in sports and such, and she quoted Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's like, yeah, men and women are that's immutable, right? You can't change that. Just don't have to go back very far. So that was smart. She used Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was like the progressive liberal hero of the Supreme Court in the last 100 years, and then just simply got into this question with Ketanji Brown Jackson of, you know, what is a woman? And because of ideology, she couldn't answer it. And then unfortunately, Senator Blackburn didn't follow up with, well, what are you then? You know, you can't define what a woman is. What are you? And that literally happened in a confirmation hearing for a United States Supreme Court justice. Isn't that? I mean, it's so ridiculous. It's laughable. So we'll get to that. But a couple other things I wanted to follow up. Yesterday, we were talking about this proclamation that Ron DeSantis had about the young woman that came in second behind the man that jumped in the pool with the girls. And because she's from Sarasota, Florida, so he just went ahead and proclaimed that she's the winner. She's an accomplished swimmer, Olympian. And so Ron DeSantis just continues to set the tone. I mean, if it were up to me, Ron DeSantis would be running for president in a couple of years and not Donald Trump. We'll do a show on that coming up in the next couple of weeks. I just want to open up the phones that day and just ask you what you think about Donald Trump running again, because odds are pretty darn good that he's going to. But Ron DeSantis, a lot of conservatives should be taking notes from this guy. So this is a great article. This is in the Federalist. 8 lessons from the Ron DeSantis school of dominating the corrupt media. And then I've got a follow-up to that I mentioned from the Daily Wire, the co-founder of the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro's organization, which is getting into everything. They're making movies now, and now they're getting into the shaving business, starting a shaving company to go after Harry's razors. You know, that's one of those things that you subscribe to, and they'll send you their razors, different brands, different levels of razors, yada, yada, yada. And it's just a great example of what you do when you live in this crazy world, when the culture and the media and corporate America, as well as the government, are just going totally progressive and woke. Instead of complaining, you do something about it. So instead of just complaining about Harry's razors, you start a competitor, you go beat them up out there in a fair fight in the marketplace. Great story. So we'll get to that too. 8 lessons from the Ron DeSantis school of dominating the corrupt media. This is just great. And unfortunately, we're to the point where you actually have to put an article out like this to get people to understand it. But let me just take you through these things. And this is what we need in a president. This is what we need in conservatives. This is what we need if you engage the media at all. This is the deal. Okay, so number one, acknowledge that the press has a narrative. No kidding. DeSantis didn't just call out their lies. He pointed to their motivation for lying. Quote, our data is available. Our data is transparent. He's talking about COVID stuff. So any insinuation otherwise is just typical partisan narrative trying to be spun. We've succeeded, and I think that people just want to don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative. It challenges their assumptions. So they've got to try and find a boogeyman. So the press has a narrative. They're bent left. It's kind of like corporate America as well as intellectual America. About 80 to 90% of all tenured professors nationwide are liberal. They've done a great job of infecting the whole system, infesting the system from the bottom up, starting like in, you know, kindergarten. We talked about that yesterday. Number two, from the Ron DeSantis school, don't call media mainstream. Call them what they are. So what are they? His nickname for them are smear merchants. That's what he calls them. He calls them smear merchants. Okay. It's not mainstream. That's too innocuous. You got to call them what they are. Liberal bent smear merchants. Okay. Number three, you catch more flies with wit than boring press releases. DeSantis took notes from the former President Donald Trump's penchant for cutting through forgettable politician speak and leaning into one-liners and comebacks. A witty line will help people remember what you said. Just look at the cheeky memo DeSantis put out Tuesday recognizing Emma Wyant, that's the one I was reading yesterday, who placed directly behind male swimmer Leah Thomas as the rightful winner of the NCAA 500-yard freestyle. Right? It's just funny. And this is what he put out. This was his tweet. By allowing men to compete in women's sports, the NCAA is destroying opportunities for women, making a mockery of its championships, and perpetuating a fraud. In Florida, we reject these lies and recognize Sarasota's Emma Wyant as the best women's swimmer in the 500-yard freestyle. He just takes it to them. Number four, don't hide the bait to fight your friends harder than your enemies. Don't take the bait, I mean. To fight your friends harder than your enemies. The corporate media loves it when Republicans go after each other, whether it's Never Trumpers piling on criticism of the former president, neocons smearing conservatives who want to avoid wars, Putin lovers, or National Review going after Senator Josh Hawley for questioning a Supreme Court nominee's soft on sex crimes record, which we'll get to. DeSantis showed he can go through that, see through that game, and more Republicans should too. One podcaster asked DeSantis about the media's trying to drive a wedge between you and your constituents here in Florida, former President Trump. Is there any sort of animosity? What's that relationship like? This is what the media does, and you cannot fall for the bait. You know what they're trying to do, so don't take it, the governor responded. So he just doesn't do it. So these are great, great pointers from Governor Ron DeSantis and the way he operates. And we all need to operate this way. You need to operate this way with liberal media, social media, Facebook, whatever. And even in conversations, too. There's a lot more there. Then we'll talk about 8 Joe Biden scandals on that laptop when we come back.
There's a man going around taking names.
Good old Johnny Cash. This is Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Welcome back. Good to be with you today. Thank you for your time, by the way. I don't say that often enough, the fact that you tune in or watch or listen to the podcast, whatever you do, whatever you go through to be a part of the show and to be a part of the audience. I appreciate that. I don't take it lightly. And it's a strange thing to know that people are willing to take some time out of their day to listen to your opinion, what you have to say. And it's only as good as when it glorifies the Lord, and I'm tracking with biblical truth, and so that's what I try to do every day. But thank you so much for your time and for listening or watching and being a part of it. It really is a blessing, and I hope I bless you in return. Going through this list, this is from the Federalist, kind of 8 lessons that we can learn from Ron DeSantis, who I wish was running for president, but he's not going to, not yet. He will. Mark my words on that. There's no question that Ron DeSantis is a inevitability. Certainly running, I think, for the most part, he's probably an inevitability to be the next Republican president after whatever happens with Trump. I'm not so sure Trump can win, but if things continue to go the direction they are. Listen, somebody else recently was saying, I think it might have been Clay Travis on the Travis and Buck Sexton. They took over for Rush Limbaugh, talking about he thinks that Biden will definitely not run. But on his way out, because he thinks that Hunter Biden actually is going to be brought up on charges, and that Joe Biden will pardon his son on the way out the door, and then he's out. Biden's out, but who's going to run? Kamala? No way. That's not going to happen. So it's going to be interesting to watch that. Trump will run. We'll see what happens. I'm not convinced that he can win. But if he does, or even if he doesn't, then 4 years later,
6 years from now. Bet your bottom dollar, God willing, Ron DeSantis runs. So we're going through these lessons from the way Ron DeSantis handles the media. Number five, don't be cowed by an ad hominem attack. Last April, CBS's 60 Minutes ginned up a fake scandal about DeSantis, smearing him for using the ubiquitous Florida grocery store Publix to help distribute COVID vaccines. Instead of being intimidated by the smear, DeSantis hit back. Quote, when you're talking about this ridiculous smear narrative, it's important to break down just how false, how thoroughly dishonest it is. Because this is bad for our country to have big corporate media smearing for profit just because I'm in the other party than them and using their partnership to craft narratives regardless of the facts. So he just comes right out and hits them back, okay? But he does it with a lot more tact and self-control than Trump ever did or could. Number six, quit trying to make the corrupt media like you. That's huge, all right? Our guest in the third segment, Joseph Backholm, wrote an article for Family Research Council that I'm going to read, but I love the whole notion of it, which is, are we required as Christians to be winsome? Or is there ever a time when it's okay just to be kind of tough? So that's a great lesson. DeSantis can be tough, but he's not belligerent like Trump. Quit trying to make the corrupt media like you. If the corrupt press will make up scandals about you, they're not going to be your BFF. Stop trying to grovel in front of corporate media outlets, he said. Stop thinking that they're going to like you. That's right. You're not going to win that. So, and by the way, don't take that and run with it as a Christian. As a Christian, you have a higher calling on you than a governor does in terms of how you treat people. So remember that. Number seven, don't waste energy on issues that the press says matter that actually don't. So don't waste your time. Number eight, just stop trusting the corrupt press for Pete's sake. From fawning over disgraced New York Governor Andy Cuomo to saying Joe Biden would be an adult in the room about foreign policy to insisting Hunter Biden's laptop, which is up next, was a Russian plant, the corporate press has been pants on fire wrong time and time again. They've lost all credibility, and Republicans should stop lending it to them. Quote, the message is for people out there is useless. You're a partisan leftist. Do not trust the corporate media, DeSantis said last June. Can't trust them. They're not trustworthy. They will lie. So just call it out what it is. He knows what they are, and then he just uses them. But he does it with some tact and self-control, which is great. All right, off to Joe Biden. And you don't. I'm pretty sure, now I can get pretty dark. I'm pretty sure there's a part of Joe Biden and certainly Hunter Biden that's loving the fact that Ukraine's going up in flames right now. Because Ukraine going up in flames means Ukraine isn't getting investigated and the laptop is a big problem for them. And again, like Clay Travis said, I think I have no problem agreeing with that assertion that Hunter Biden gets smacked around and gets brought up on charges, gets found guilty, and on the way out the door, his dad pardons him. Because what are you going to do about it? Nothing. Eight Joe Biden scandals inside Hunter Biden's MacBook that now the corporate media, like New York Times, is saying, oh, yeah, it's legit. It's legit, you know, a year and a half later. We covered that yesterday as well. These scandals are no longer about Hunter Biden. They're about now President Joe Biden, and we need answers. This is also from The Federalist. Thanks, Bill. Pay to play in Ukraine. The most obvious scandal barred by the emails and text messages contained on Hunter's laptop contains the influence profiteering Joe Biden apparently participated in. Remember, he's the big guy. So there's that. Number two, China gets in the game. Ukraine is but a patch on the influence peddling undertaken by Hunter on behalf of, quote unquote, the big guy who gets 10%. As the younger Biden referred to his dad, China also played a large role in the family enterprise, as demonstrated by, again, passing coverage in November 2021. Then the Times reported in brief that Hunter Biden's joint global equity firm, the Bohai Harvest Equity Investment Fund, had helped coordinate the purchase by a Chinese mining company of the world's largest cobalt source in the Congo. No, we don't have any ties there. Don't worry about it. Number three, Moscow, Kazakhstan, and more. While Ukraine and China likely hold the most significant revelations, once those threads are pulled, investigators should move on to Moscow, which, according to a Senate report, holds another possible scandal. That report documents that Hunter also received a combined $3.5 million from the wife of the former Moscow mayor, a Kazakhstan investor, and several other individuals. Nothing to see there, right? Number four, Ukraine's firing of the prosecutor investigating Burisma. Remember that? When Biden said, hey, I'll give you till the end of the day. Get rid of that guy or you're not getting your billion. Here's the quote. I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion. I said you're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here in, I think it was about 6 hours. I looked at them and said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. This is Biden. If the prosecutor is not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, blankety blank, he got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid at the time, meaning someone that would pull the rug over something. Number five, Obama-Biden administration ignoring conflicts of interest. Yep, that's going to be in there. Number six, the intelligence community's briefing on Biden. Ruh-roh. Number seven, possible collusion to interfere in the 2020 election. Ruh-roh again. Because you got, remember those 50 former intelligence officials? They're all like, there's nothing in there. This is bogus Russian disinformation. They're all covering, too. Number eight, Joe Biden is a lying dog-faced pony soldier. What in the world is the man talking about? Remember that? Lying dog-faced pony soldier. That's when Biden really gets after you, when he's calling you that kind of name. So we'll see what happens. But I would love to see Hunter perp walked in orange. Wouldn't that be great? And not because I'm trying to relish in somebody's suffering. Hunter Biden's a sad story. And we should all have a soft spot in our heart for somebody that goes down the roads he's gone down. He says life's a train wreck. Right? That's where I would challenge you, and I have to challenge myself regularly, to remember that these are people, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who's going to end up on the Supreme Court soon. They're all people made in the image of God. I need to remind myself of that often so that I don't dehumanize everybody that I disagree with. It's easy to do, isn't it? Or am I the only one? My hand's up. I guess maybe I'm the only one. Anyway, when we come back, let's talk to Joseph Backholm, Senior Fellow for Biblical Worldview and Strategic Engagement at the Family Research Council. He wrote an excellent analysis, short and sweet and to the point, about a upcoming Supreme Court justice that can't answer a simple question like, what is a woman? That's now complicated math in 2022. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Well, although the nomination and ultimate confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson is pretty much a done deal, they get to run the board that way. We'll see, unless Joe Manchin's got something interesting up his sleeve, because he can do that, the most powerful man in the Senate. So we'll see. But in an exchange, very interesting, we'll talk about Ted Cruz going after about this light sentencing of child porn, convicted child porn people. We'll get to that in the fourth segment, but she had a tense exchange with Senator Marsha Blackburn. And Blackburn's talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg in a previous case where she quoted her, physical differences between men and women are enduring. The two sexes are not fungible. A community made up of exclusively of one sex is different from a community composed of both. And then she's like, do you agree with that? And she's like, well, I don't really know what that's all about. And then Blackburn had a follow-up question. Let's play that right quick.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context. So I'm not a biologist.
I'm not a biologist. So maybe a future Supreme Court justice knows something that I don't know. We'll ask Joseph Backholm, who's back on the show. Joseph, great to hear from you, Senior Fellow for Biblical Worldview and Strategic Engagement at Family Research Council. Joseph, how are you, my friend?
I'm well, Steve. Good to talk to you.
You as well. I appreciated your brief but to-the-point commentary on Facebook about this. It's just, yeah. I mean, the hilarity and the ridiculousness going back to when you were out in Washington claiming to be a rather tall Chinese woman, and people had a hard time refuting you on that, and then we get to this. I mean, what's your take on this? It's just total insanity.
Well, in a sense, it is insane in a biblical sense. It's foolishness, but there is a real logic for people like Judge Jackson and progressives in general who have completely embraced this idea of expressive individualism. They deny objective truth. Therefore, we get to define reality for ourselves, including what our identity is. And they hold that to be a sacred right of the individual to decide those things for themselves. And, of course, what we're all commenting on is how bizarre the world becomes very quickly if we think we get to define objective reality for ourselves. But they would rather the insane than the strictures of having to abide by an objective sense of reality. And we're just seeing another example.
Now, for you as somebody that practices law, is practices law, well-educated, does this kind of ideology in a potential most likely Supreme Court justice, is this a problem in terms of jurisprudence and her job sitting on the Supreme Court?
It's a tremendous problem. But this is not at all unique within the legal profession. You may have seen the uproar, the incident at Yale Law School last week, I believe it was, when Christian Wagner, who's an attorney at the Alliance Defending Freedom, was there with somebody from the ACLU. The whole purpose of this event was to show that there's common ground between the left and the right on First Amendment free speech issues. Yet, the law school student body at Yale, right? These are the elites. This is where all of our Supreme Court justices came from. They disrupted and chanted and shouted and yelled so that a conservative person wasn't allowed to speak about something that they actually agreed with the left on, just by virtue of being of that persuasion. So, yes, it's tremendously problematic for a judge to sit on the bench and believe that there's no such thing as objective truth. Because then what's the purpose of having the law? What's the purpose of having language? What's the purpose of having jurisprudence if you reject the idea that there is a reality independent of what I feel?
Yeah, and I only wish that Marsha Blackburn had turned around and said something like, well, then let me ask you a follow-up question. Ma'am, if I may be so bold as to refer to you as a ma'am, what are you? Are you a man or a woman or are you an other? I mean, what kind of follow-up question would have been helpful there, Joseph?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the point was kind of made. You can't, I mean, and Marsha Blackburn is actually a pretty gracious woman, and I don't think she was, I really think that this was a sincere question trying to get at a real issue. So I'm okay with the fact that she didn't try to rub her nose in it.
Yeah.
But this is a really, it's a critical issue, and I've been saying this for a while now, for those of us who are even just voters, we can basically get everything that we need to know about a nominee or a candidate for office by asking the very simple question, what's the difference between men and women? And a person's entire worldview can be discerned, for the most part, based on their answer to that question.
Yeah, it's not very difficult at all. So in one fashion, we should be grateful for that. The whole crowd, the whole environment that says we don't believe in anything binary, that's actually a binary test to see whether you have any kind of a semblance of a rational worldview or if you're just ideology over reality all the time. On this particular issue, and Joseph, you've been at it for a while. I've been at it for a while. One of the things we struggle at, and I really appreciate, you're a great writer and a great communicator. You've done great work and what you're doing at FRC. I just put a link up for a page at the FRC blog that you can read Joseph's writing. But this one blog that you wrote not that long ago is last month in February. Joseph, on this point and how we react and how we engage, something I've always struggled with is kind of truth and grace. And as a Christian, do we always have to be winsome? So when I saw that you wrote a blog about that, should Christians always be winsome, that caught my eye. Because I think we struggle with it. We struggle with it a lot in the last 2 years with COVID and the shutdowns and everything that the government foisted upon us. It's kind of this balance between, hey, do I have to have a great reputation? Do I have to be nice to everybody? Or is there a time and a place when we can kind of put our foot down and not come across as very nice people? How do we manage that? That's very difficult sometimes.
It is difficult. There's a difference between being loving and being nice. And that's the challenge that we have is we see so many examples in Scripture with Jesus of saying things that are true but are hard, and there are hard truths. And he did not hesitate to say things that he knew people would be bothered by, but he always had their best intention in mind. And he was always speaking in love, trying to make them aware of their deception, of the fact that in some cases your father actually is of the devil, as he said to the Pharisees. You're of your father, the devil. That's not, you know, it's not a nice thing to say, but it's true, and they needed to hear it because he wanted them to repent and come to the truth. The challenge that we as people and as sinners have is we want to say true things, but we're not always saying it out of actual concern and love for that person. So that's where I think we need to grow, and yes, we have to be ready to say hard things, even if they're not going to be received well. We just have to make sure that our motivation is always actually love and concern for the people we're talking to.
Yeah, which is, if you get to 1 Corinthians 13, and anybody that's been to a wedding, any kind of a Christian wedding's probably heard this, but you always got to check your motivation. It's such a great point that, and Matt Walsh, he did a great, 25-minute presentation recently. I think it was University of Georgia somewhere on the issue of Leah Thomas and the transgenderism and everything, and he was so good about that. He goes, yeah, sometimes people don't need you to be nice. They need you to be truthful, and to be truthful is to be nice. Yeah, he'd missed it on the kind of a biblical side in terms of loving. But I think that's what we have to do. Number one, am I going to say something? What's my motivation? And then number two, my desire to be nice going to keep me away from the truth? And as a Christian, we don't have that option. We're supposed to be people of truth all the time.
That's exactly right. We are supposed to be people of truth all the time. And one of the dividing lines, one of the challenges we face in the culture, picking up off your 1 Corinthians 13 reference, is love does not rejoice in iniquity. It rejoices in the truth. Mm-hmm. And the culture and the gospel have a very different definition of love. And the culture demands that you show your love by rejoicing in whatever decisions, whatever lifestyles, whatever habits somebody else claims makes them happy. But Scripture says you cannot rejoice. It does not rejoice in iniquity. It rejoices in the truth, which means there are some things that we cannot tolerate, not because we're mean, but because we are loving.
Right, exactly. And that's why the gospel is incomplete if you're not incorporating damnation as well as salvation. It's such a great point. Last question. This is kind of a big one just to get us thinking in the right direction. Joseph, we're talking to Joseph Backholm from the Family Research Council. What do you think, just in terms of actual headlines, what's going on in the U.S., set aside Russia, set aside Ukraine, what do you see as the biggest challenge or problem that we have in this country right now, culturally speaking, from a Christian perspective?
that's a big question. You got me 30 seconds on this, right? Well, I would say, with the church, I think, the church is in many ways the problem. We are also the solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest challenge is the church not being fully, committed and sold out to who God claims he is. Do we really believe those things? I think the key to saving our country, in addition to keeping our kids out of government schools so we are discipling them, is having the church surrender our reputation so that we give that to God and that we just don't care a whit about what our neighbor, about what Twitter thinks about us. We are primarily concerned about what Jesus thinks about us. And if we surrender our reputation, let him manage that. We're okay if our reputation gets damaged and spoiled and ruined because Jesus promised us that was going to happen account of him. Yeah. If we're okay with that, then we start living for an audience of one. We become released to be all the things that God has created us to be. The fear of man is a snare. I feel like the church is very snared. Once we become unsnared by abandoning the fear of man, we become change agents in the culture.
That's so good. See, I asked a huge question. You gave a great pointed answer, which is why I'm grateful for you being able to come on the show. Joseph Backholm, God bless you, my brother. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. We'll talk again. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great talking to Joseph Backholm. I put links up, by the way, so that you can go check. He's a great writer, great communicator, obviously. And just all kinds of great blog posts. I put up a direct link for the one about are we always called to be loving and winsome? And what's the deal with that? And that's when and remember, this is one of those lines that you should remember. We need to be willing to surrender our reputation. Are you willing to surrender your reputation to represent Christ, to represent his truth, and to speak truth to a culture? And then always, of course, like 1 Corinthians 13 reminds us, to check your motivation. If I'm just doing it to put somebody in their place or to win or to make myself feel better, then my motivation isn't out of love and it doesn't count. All God hears is gong, bong, bing. You're just making noise. But if you're telling somebody the truth, Matt Walsh was talking about that Leah Thomas, the guy pretending to be a woman and beating up women in the swim pool in competition, he doesn't need to be, he doesn't need you to be nice to him. He needs you to tell him the truth. Because one day soon, if he's not careful, he's going to be injecting himself with all kinds of stuff. And then he's going to turn his exterior over to a butcher who's going to play Frankenstein with his body. And that's very frank, direct language. He needs truth. He doesn't need to be coddled. He doesn't need to be lied to. He needs the truth. And if you love him, you'll tell him the truth. So, like, for example, if some, like, with the name thing, if I met Leah Thomas, he's Mr. Noble, would you please call me Leah? Okay, fine. Because it's just a name. If you want to call yourself Rover, you call yourself Bill, call yourself Vader, call yourself, I don't know, Phone. Okay, that's a name, whatever. Now, I say, now I want you to refer to me as a woman. Well, I'm not going to do that, which means I'll never serve in the United States Supreme Court, apparently. So let's go back to that for a second. So Ted Cruz pulls out a whiteboard, and I'm trying to learn more about this. This is kind of concerning, okay? And she knows she's going to get in, so she can dance around this stuff a lot. We're talking about Ketanji Brown Jackson, because Joe Biden said when he was running for office, if he wins, he's going to nominate the first black female to the Supreme Court, because that's what matters most. By the way, we already have a black person on the Supreme Court. And if the we've got, let's do the math, everybody. Okay, grab your calculator. Let's do the math. We've got about 340 million people in America. And 12 to 13% of the population is African American. So if we have 9 people on the Supreme Court and we want a 13% representation to properly represent black people, that would be 1.17 people. Round that correctly down. That's one. We have one. Clarence Thomas. So to add another black person to the United States Supreme Court, now some people aren't going to want to hear this truth, would be to overrepresent the black populace. So if we're going to set up the Supreme Court based on representing the populace in terms of ethnicity, skin color, sex, can we say that? Sex, or even sexual identity, because Elena Kagan's a lesbian, then we're good. We're good. Look at women versus men, black versus white, Latino. We're good. What we really need is either Indian, Asian, something like that. But we're good on the black side. We have one black member of the United States Supreme Court, and that's enough if we're going to do it that way. If you're going to play by those rules, then we're there. 1.17 is 13% of 9. Of course, that's logical. We can't do that. So Cruz pulls out the whiteboard to show SCOTUS nominee her record on sentencing child porn offenders. This is disturbing. So he gets the whiteboard, right, to show the record on sentencing child porn offenders, which a lot of people have come under fire. Josh Hawley started this the other day and everybody went ballistic. Ted Cruz pulls out a whiteboard to illustrate how in child pornography cases, Ketanji Brown Jackson gave the defendants an average 47.2% less sentence than what the prosecutors recommended. Cruz noted cases where Jackson gave significantly lighter sentences to convicts than what the prosecutors were asking for. In one case, for example, the judge gave a sentence of 28 months when a prosecutor was asking for 79 to 97 months. That's a huge difference, which Cruz noted was what? 64% reduction. In another case, prosecutor asked for 24 months and Jackson imposed a 3-month sentence, an 88% reduction. Cruz highlighted another 4 cases where Jackson doled out sentences lighter than what prosecutors asked for, which he said averaged about a 47% drop. Every single case, 100% of them, he said, when prosecutors came before you with child pornography cases, you sentenced the defenders to substantially below, not just the guidelines, which are way higher, but what the prosecutor asked for on average of these cases, 47% less was her reduction. Okay. A couple of observations, she said. One, is that your chart does not include all of the factors that Congress has told judges to consider, including probation officers' recommendations in these cases. The committee has not been given the probation officers' recommendations, Cruz said to Jackson. I would love to see those. We just don't have access to them. I take these cases very seriously, she said. As a mother, as someone who, as a judge, has to review the actual evidence in these cases and based on Congress's requirements, take into account not only the sentencing guidelines, not only the recommendations, but also things like the stories of the victims, also things like the nature and circumstances of the events and the history and characteristics of the defendant. So she kind of goes on and on. And 100% of these cases, Cruz said, was the evidence less than the prosecutors asked for? And back and forth they go, and she didn't really give a good answer. So what's going on there? She talks legalese, but here's the problem. She knows she's in, so she doesn't have to give a full and complete answer. Because remember, this is a political process. It's not about finding the best judge. Because if it's about finding the best judge, I don't care what your skin color is. I don't care what your sex is. We just want to find the people that understand the law, understand the Constitution, and will apply it fairly. That's all you do. But that's not what's happening here. This is a political process. Remember that. So we're going to get somebody on the Supreme Court that has that as a background issue and refuses to answer the question, what's a woman? God help us. Okay. I put this ad up. This was about a four-minute ad from the Daily Wire. The co-founder and co-CEO, Jeremy Boring, at Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro. Okay. And now I can't play the ad on the air because they use some bad language. And if you saw the video of it, it can be a few racy in a few spots. But it's brilliant in terms of what they're doing. So he had a conversation with Ben Shapiro the other day. On Tuesday, Daily Wire co-founder and co-CEO Jeremy Boring joined his counterpart Ben Shapiro on his show to discuss the conception and purpose of Jeremy's Razors, a razor company launched in response to Harry's Razors pulling their ads from the Daily Wire 1 year ago today after a Twitter user with two followers complained about widely held opinions about gender identity and sex being expressed from a Daily Wire host. Boring detailed the very moment he knew the Daily Wire had to launch a competitor to Harry's Razors and why the creation of the company can be vital for millions of conservatives and hopefully inspire others to participate in this larger goal. After a Twitter account with two followers complained about Daily Wire host Michael Knowles discussing his views on gender dysphoria, Harry's quickly moved to pull their ads from the Daily Wire. Harry, quote, Harry's immediately, of course, had to virtue signal and say, oh, we had no idea. We're shocked, shocked, I tell you, to discover that people were paying to help us reach a conservative audience, have conservative views, Boring mocked. They called those views inexcusable. So like a man is a man and a woman is a woman. Chromosomes, DNA, any outie, that kind of stuff. Said that they were there. There was values misalignment between our two companies and immediately pulled $80,000 worth of advertising off of Michael Knowles' show. And at that very moment, I knew we had to launch a razor company, he asserted. And the reason is because these woke corporations do this all the time. They pay conservatives to help them reach an audience. They pay us to endorse their products. We only do it if they're good products. We're proud to have them as sponsors. We tell our audiences about them. And then at the first sign of trouble, they stab us in the back. They betray us. Not by pulling their money, but for doing it publicly, they have to go virtue signal. And by virtue signaling and publicly saying, as Harry's did, that our views are inexcusable, they're telling all of our other advertisers that the only excusable thing to do would be for them to cancel as well. I've been complaining about it for years, Boring told Shapiro. And what really happened here was I just got tired of complaining about it. I thought, why don't we actually do something about it instead? We don't want to give Harry's a bad day. And why don't we give conservatives a place where they can spend their money, get a good shave, and give their money to someone who doesn't openly hate them and repudiate them? Right now, woke corporations pay no price for dismissing conservatives since largely there are no anti-woke alternatives for conservatives to patronize. Ah, there it is. I want to create a price, an actual penalty, by creating a market around the sort of disenfranchised conservative buyer, he said. I believe in the long run, the only way to change the behavior of these big companies is to actually incentivize them with market forces into having to come compete for our business. They have to actually take a loss to realize that they have to change their behavior. Conservatives aren't going to win by lamenting the loss of the culture, lamenting the loss of the economy, he emphasized. We actually have to go create a new economy. We have to create a new culture, or what we used to call a subculture. So what I did is I shared that, the original article when they announced, and the commercial. And it's very funny. It's very snarky. It's not very Christian. Okay, but the Daily Wire is not a Christian organization. So when I look at what they're doing, I don't start to go, oh, this is so offensive. They're not. Ben Shapiro is a pretty devout Jew. I don't know anything about Boring. But based on the way the commercial goes, I'm like, okay, there's not a lot of allegiance there to biblical concepts of decency, so on and so forth. But I did share it. And if you go watch it, it is brilliant. It's funny. It's aggressive. It gets his point across, and it's going right after. All right, fine. You don't want our money? You're going to kick us off? Then we'll compete against you, which I thought is great. I was all for it. So if you can go, I'll put it up on the radio show Facebook page. I'd shared it on my personal page, but I'll put it on the Facebook page. And look past some of the language. Look past some of the content. I mean, it's not like it's R-rated. It's pretty edgy. But it is brilliant. So instead of sitting around complaining about it, they said, fine, let's give conservatives an alternative. You don't have to give a woke corporation your money, but you would like to have an alternative, and that's what they're doing. So look to see this happen more and more. And I appreciate it. I think it's great that they're like, okay, fine. You don't want to do business with us. We don't want to do business with you. So we'll create our own business. So I'll share that so you can check it out for yourself. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.